Well, good morning. It's Thursday, and that means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. How you doing? I'm Tom Flanagan. And before we get underway, a reminder that you are always a welcome part of the conversation by calling 414-1234 here in Tallahassee, or if it's long distance from where you are to Florida's capital city, it's toll-free, 800-926-8809. You can also post a comment or a question via email, and that address is perspectives@wfsu.org. And let us not forget our Twitter pals, and we're at WFSU Perspective. Hey, bet you didn't know that amongst many other things. Now, you've seen all the pink ribbons around, you know, for Breast Cancer Awareness Month and all that, and that certainly is a major part of the October observance. But this is also American Archives Month, and at one time, the word archives probably conjured up an image of, you know, dusty shelves in some obscure library, you know, full of ancient tattered books and documents. And then in the next scene, you know, Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones comes wandering in and he's thumbing through the old manuscripts because he's looking for some historic artifact. And then the bad guy comes and, you know, then he escapes and you know all that. Well, anyway, today's archives, while still repositories for all that hard copy type info, have most definitely transitioned to an online resource that's available to anyone, anywhere, at any time. Here in Florida, our state archives are headquartered in the R.A. Gray Building. You know, that's right back to the west of the Florida Supreme Court Building. And to give us a taste of what the archives is really about and how every Floridian can literally become a part of the state archives, we brought in a couple folks to tell us about that. And the first is Jody Norman. She is the archive supervisor, the Lord High Head Honchoette of the Florida Archives in the R.A. Gray Building. Jody, thanks for coming in.
I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here.
And along with her is John Grandage. He is the archives historian and a history teacher and all kinds of other things. And John, we appreciate your coming in too.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. Happy to be here.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the history of the Florida Archives. Before we went on the air, Jody, you were saying that as the state archives goes, ours really isn't that old.
No, it's not. It's a very young archives. It was officially established in 1969. So some of the earlier records went to the Library of Congress and to the National Archives.
Wow. So if you wanted to find out something, I know you have now things about the Civil War and all that, but some of that original documentation, you'd actually have to go to D.C. or to their online repository to get that
stuff.
It's
possible, yes. But since that time, the archives has grown into an enormous and very rich archives. We have over 40,000 cubic feet of records. I don't know if people are familiar what a cubic foot box is, but it's about 2 feet long and about a foot high and a foot and a half wide. So that's a lot of material. 30,000 cubic feet are state records. They deal with anything from pre-territorial to present records. And that's all three branches of government records. So that's judicial, legislative, and
also the executive branch,
Thank
the records
you.
Of
yes.
the governor.
Yeah. So in addition to the government records, we have manuscript collections, which are non-government records. And we have some local government records. And we also have the largest Florida-related photographic collection in the world. The photographic collection boasts over 1.5 million images.
My golly, how can you keep track of 1.5 million images?
It's difficult, but we do it. I mean, one of the things that has helped us get a better handle on what we have and put out the information about what we have about these photographs is the Florida Memory website.
That is something that I remember hearing about here just a couple years ago, and John and Jody, you were both involved in that, you know, when we had the conversation. John, what was it, and what is it like now, since it's an ongoing process, to take those tens of thousands of cubic feet of documents and photographs, and you've also got video and audio files and all that kind of stuff, and digitize it and put it on the web? What, do you have a server the size of Crawfordville or what?
Yeah, it's really a remarkable amount of information, and it's difficult to make calls on what we put online. You know, we have so much that we'd like to put up, And so each year when we work on our projects, we're really picking from a really remarkable list of rich documents that we have to then say, well, we're going to go with this year and maybe we'll put this down the road. But it's for a historian, it's like torture. I am not only sitting downstairs from the archives, I can go pull boxes all the time, but I have to kind of wrangle with the fact that I can't put everything online, at least right now.
Okay, and that leads us to our first email here. And by the way, it is, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Florida Archives, the Florida Memory Project, and the fact that October is officially National Archives Month. So our nearest one here is in Tallahassee, the Florida Archives, and that's what we're talking about. 414-1234, the phone number, 800-926-8809, long distance. And as we said, perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. And the email goes here, question for John and Jody. How do you classify all of the many items you digitize? Do you have someone sitting there that kind of has to go through every scan and then types up a description for it, including the names and the date and the other identifying data? You got to do that for everything?
There's several steps involved in doing this. First of all, the people behind the scenes, the real foundation of what happens in an archives is called the collection management unit. And those are the people who decide which collect to acquire. They arrange them, they describe them, and they get them ready for digitization. Or not even just digitization, because some people, we will not digitize everything, so just get them ready for patron use. So for Florida Memory, we have a criteria, and that criteria includes the historical significance of the records. It includes the fragility of the collection. If it's a popular collection but it's very fragile, we want to go ahead and digitize it as quickly as possible so that we can reduce the handling of the original material. And we have also just the most used collections. So we use those three primary judgment calls and what we decide to digitize and put available on the Florida Memory website. And that's worked very well for us. We get positive feedback. We do talk to our patrons, things that they're looking for, things they would like to see, and that's how it's grown. So currently we have over 530,000 digitized primary source records that may include paper records, historical collections, audio files, over 3,000 audio files that are available, which could be music or interviews, that type of thing. We have 120 full-length films. That's a very big deal. Not many archives do that. So you can watch the film from the beginning to the end. You also have the option of watching a clip, a short clip, if you want to decide if you want to watch the whole film. We have educational units, and I think John would be a better person to talk about those. But we also have exhibits. So we have exhibits that are online exhibits that show off our most treasured documents or our resources.
Given the amount of material that you have, not just digitized, but have the original or the hard copy, the actual tangible artifact itself, how do you fit all that in the R.A. Gray building? I mean, it is a large structure, but it's not that big.
Well, it's bigger than most people think. There are three floors that are temperature – actually four floors now that are temperature and humidity controlled. And like I said, we're able to fit that 40,000 cubic feet in there now. We are running out of space, so that's always an issue.
Yeah, and you don't have much room to expand. You got a parking garage on one side, a street on the other, and then the Civic Center property kind of binds you in there. So where do you go?
And that's right. We share the building with several other people, the Museum of Florida History, with elections, with the corporations, with cultural affairs. So it's a pretty tight fit.
Boy. Well, and you had said, Jody, in addition to the documentary evidence there, that much of which, of course, is the official records of the state of Florida, which I'm sure historians would just have a field day over, not to mention journalists who are trying to get some kind of a historical backdrop to a lot of the stories that they're working on. The idea of having the audiovisual collection, John, as part of that record, too, has to be really exciting because there's so much good stuff on the internet, but this is all very, very Florida-centric stuff.
That's right. It's all Florida related, and that goes back to our collections policy of what we collect at the archives. And as Jody mentioned, the audio collection is one of our most popular. It's incredibly rich. We have the recordings from the Florida Folk Festival going back to its inception in 1954. Actually, I believe it started the year before that, but mm-hmm. they started recording in 54. And those go up into the 2000s. So all of the recordings from the Florida Folk Festival. And then the Florida Folk Life program would go out and interview people about traditional ways of life, traditional arts and crafts, and then also about their cultural traditions. And we have all those recordings as well. So if you want to learn about Cuban Americans in Florida, for example, or people who immigrated here from elsewhere in the Caribbean, or even from Europe, we have a large collection of folks who came from Greece, for example, or Turkey, or wherever it is. And we have all of their stories. And so people who are doing research, I would say that more of an ethnographic type quality to them, and so they're really tremendous. And then the film collection is also very, very impressive. Our oldest film in the archives is a 1916 silent film made when Jacksonville was the hub of the film industry, and that's our oldest film. And you can see that online. It's called Bouncing Baby. They go from 1916, the old silent films, up into the 1970s and 80s. We actually have a large collection that was donated by WFSU.
Yes, and we also, I believe, full disclosure, gave you folks a whole bunch of our old Capitol reports that were on reel-to-reel tape, because after about, 30 or 35 years, many reel tape will start to deteriorate right. and not preferable. And you guys had those big ovens. You could bake them in and then digitize them.
That's
so,
right.
So thank you. It's right. That's exciting. I think we have a lot of state luminaries and historic figures that have appeared on that program over the years. But how many pages do you have right now in the Florida Memory Project? It's got to be massive.
I think it's easiest to say how many resources we have on the site. We have over, and I may have mentioned this, 530,000 primary source documents. And those documents or records are in the form of textual records, audio records, film or video, photographs. We have, again, like I mentioned, educational units, and we have an online exhibit section.
It's something you can definitely get lost in, and I do on a regular basis. People are yelling at me, where is that thing you promised me? And will you please get off the Florida Memory Project and do some work? Huh? That's what we're talking about here on Perspectives, 414-1234-800-926-8809. We'll be right back. You can't fool me. I know that you really enjoyed the History Channel back when it actually was showing history, right? Well, if so, one of the resources that you need to check out if you have not already is available through the Florida Archives, and it's called the Florida History or Memory Program. And we have a couple folks here from the State Archives who are talking about that and also how all of us who are Floridians can get involved in some way, shape, form, or fashion. So we've got John Grandage and Dee Norman from the Archives here with us today. And since this is officially Archives Month nationally, how are you folks at the Archives sort of commemorating that event, Jody?
That's a good question. Archives Month, American Archives Month, is intended to raise public awareness about the importance of historical documents and records. That's a pretty general statement. But how that works in Florida, or what we do with that, is that we provide an opportunity to celebrate Florida's historical documents, and there's lots of them. We also encourage the and publicize the many, many historical records that enrich our lives that are included in our collections. And we also recognize the people who are responsible for maintaining those records. So archivists who are responsible for acquiring and managing and preserving archival records are also responsible for providing access to, informing people about historical records, their existence, and then providing access to those records. So that's, again, sort of a general statement, but that's one of the things that we keep in mind as far as the Florida State Archives goes, the State Archives of Florida goes, when we want to promote Archives Month. And this Archives Month, we have three goals that we've really focused on. And those goals include the fact that we want to make people aware of the kinds of records that are housed in the State Archives. I'm not certain that many people know what we have there. The second thing is to promote the use of the collections. Get more people using these collections. As my boss, Gerard, always says, we're the custodians of these records, but the records belong to the citizens of Florida. So don't forget that. You know, they're your records. Use them, you know, and we try and facilitate that use. So the third thing is to encourage donations from private individuals to build up our collections and also to preserve their family legacy. So that's what we're trying to do this month. We try and do it every month, but we have a big push going. We have two major events, and John will talk more about those. But I did want to cover real quickly the types of records that we might have in the state archives. And I may have touched on this a little bit, but we have state government records, okay? And those records date back to pre-territorial times. And we also have local government records. And we have, again, like I mentioned, the large photographic collection. But so that people understand what that means, it means that you might do research in collections including correspondence, diaries, financial, legal documents, photographs, films, audio, and electronic records. And that's an important point. Archivists play a key role and ensuring digital records created today will be accessible in the future. And I don't know how many people realize how many. The volume is massive of digital records that are being created today. So that's a big deal for archivists, and we're still struggling with how to do that. So another thing I wanted to mention are the ways that people can use these records. They can visit the repository physically, and we offer free and open access. So if someone wants to read a diary by a Civil War soldier, they can do that. If someone wants to explore History Fair resources, they can do that. If they want to know why a bill became a law, we have staff that will help them do that. So that's great, but many people, as we all recognize, cannot visit the repository in person. Thus, we started digitizing our collections in 1995. That effort evolved into the State Library and Archives Florida Memory Project. And like I said, today we boast over 530,000 primary source records in the form of paper, audio, film, online exhibits, and educational exhibits.
Okay, well, before we get John into the specific events that are coming up next Friday, the 11th, and also Saturday, the 12th, something that relates back to what you just said, Jody, is going to be shared with us by George, who joins us here on Line 1. Long time no hear. George, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. I've been busy with financial aid. As you know, we had the new campus solution system, so we've been going bonkers.
I bet you have.
Yeah. What I wanted to know, and yes, as you know, next Friday and Saturday is the Greek Food Festival, and I hope everybody will come out and enjoy the food and leave with the culture, as we always say. But what I wanted to ask is, what provisions do you guys have for a person with a disability, i.e. visual, to view the records?
Good question. Jody, any special resources?
We do have a special viewing machine that if you come into the major archives research room, we can bring that machine out, and it will assist with anybody that's visually challenged.
And also help from the staff that you have there to kind of reinforce anything that might be
definitely help from the staff. We have a special printer that goes with that viewer so that they can print anything that they're interested in as well.
And the whole collection, everything, disability accessible and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Too, so.
Yes.
Wow. That is terrific. Let's talk about those events then, John, if you could.
Yeah, sure, Tom. So the first one, and as the caller mentioned, we are in a little bit of competition with the Greek Food Festival, and I also understand the Asian Food Festival coming up this weekend as well. But our events, the first one on Friday, October 11th, is going to be a digital photography show, and we're going to do it in a slideshow format. And the slideshow itself is going to feature images from the Tallahassee Democrat. Many of them were unpublished, meaning they never ran in the newspaper. And we have a very large collection in the archives from the Tallahassee Democrat. These were taken by Tallahassee Democrat photographers. Now, the photographs that we're featuring in our event run from about 1953 to 1969. And there'll be about 250 of them or so in the show. And that's going to run continuously on a loop so people can come in, enjoy it for a little while, and then walk out. But we want them to stay. So we have free food and drinks. And those are supplied by the with courtesy to the Friends, our Friends organization, our CSO group, the Friends of the State Library and Archives of Florida. And so that event's going to run from 6 to 8 p.m. on that evening. So that's next Friday, October 11th, 6 to 8 p.m. in the lobby of the R.A. Gray Building. It'll feature that slideshow and then also the free food and drinks I talked about.
Okay. And then on Saturday, you've got something coming up too, I believe, right?
That's right. And both of these are really intended to celebrate Archives Month. As Jody mentioned, archivists, the people behind the scenes, they're really the ones that are responsible for preserving so much of our history in the United States. And many people don't realize the tremendous responsibility that goes along with that. What is to be saved, right? What is going to be used by historians in the future to write about history? The people who actually make those decisions behind the scenes are archivists. And so we're celebrating not only the archives themselves, as in the physical documents and photos and videos and everything Jody talked about, but also the people behind the scenes. Now, those archives are often not possible without the participation of people, private citizens who want to donate their materials to the archives. And what we're doing on the 12th, on Saturday, is encouraging people to bring in photographs that they have, original photographs. So what we want people to bring in are the prints, are the negatives, so not digital images on a disc. We want to scan them for them. And we're calling it our Archive Scan Day. We want folks to bring these materials to us. We're going to make high-resolution copies of them. And then a selection of the items that are donated to the archives on that day will be put onto the Florida Memory website. Now, we can either scan the photographs and then return them, because many people don't want to give up their treasured family items.
Sure.
Or we can take physical possession of those. And as Jody mentioned, we have a facility that's temperature and humidity controlled. So if you're worried about your documents or your photographs deteriorating in your hot, humid Florida closet or basement or attic, we can help preserve those by if you want to make the physical donation. Now, that event on Saturday is going to be from 10 to 4. And so we really encourage people to come out, because what we're going to do is we're going to take the photographs, and when we're scanning them, we're going to talk to you about them. You know, we want to know who's in the photograph, right? We want to know where it was taken, when it was taken. So that's the part where people, if you have people in your family who played a significant role in the history of this area or Florida more broadly, we want to know about that, right? We want to take that information, put it along with the items that we're collecting. And then when people are looking at the Florida Memory website and they're doing the research that becomes the books that were written about Florida history, they might just find your story. And then your story, which was maybe only known to you, maybe only known in your family, is now part of the record, the written historical record that is then cited and gone back to time and time again to help tell a particular story. So what we're really hoping people will do is kind of appreciate what we do from an archives perspective, but then also come and participate in building the archives itself.
So potentially you could wind up with hundreds, perhaps thousands of new photographs and other information that would be incorporated into the official history of the state of Florida.
And that's absolutely right.
That's our goal. That's our goal. There is a link off the main Florida Memory webpage right now that links to the events, and there are a couple of handouts that you can download from that site that will explain better the types of photos we're looking for, the procedures that will follow during that day, during that scan day, so that people aren't stuck waiting for a long period of time. I think it's going to help the whole process run a little bit smoother. And I think this is the way that we can encourage people who are reluctant to give up their family photos to still share them, because I think we all recognize whether we want to give them up or not, we have a lot of significant images in our family photos.
Yeah, and we may not even know how significant are. And that's where the archivists come in there.
That's right. That's where we will have experts that day to look at the photo and say, this is why this is really important. And this may be why it's not as important as you may have thought in the beginning.
Well, in addition to the photos and the documents, you also, as you mentioned before, have video and audio. And I don't know, somewhere in the collection you may have an audio track by a local musician by the name of Reed Mahoney. I don't know. That's possible. Let's find out. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, pretty good. Are you in the archives there, son?
Man, it's, you know, as many benefits and things that I've done over the years, it is entirely possible, I guess. But I have no doubt that you are.
Yeah.
The reason I'm calling, as you probably are aware, is I'm a big history buff. I love this stuff. And I've commiserated often about the fact that the public school system in Florida and elsewhere just doesn't seem to put the emphasis on history that was on history when I was in public schools. And I was wondering if the Florida Archives has any relationship, has any interaction with the public school system on the primary and secondary level, so that maybe they can stimulate some of that interest that unfortunately the system itself is not doing.
Wow, that is a perfect question, Reed.
Excellent. Excellent question. We actually have an education officer who goes out on a regular basis and talks to teachers and students and gets their feedback about different kinds of learning units that we're developing, whether they fit the need, the Sunshine State standard needs, or just basically go in and say, you know, what is it that you need that you can't find? And we try and pull from our primary sources and create learning units. And the learning units, I have to say, are probably the most underrepresented and, to me, the most valuable component on Florida Memory. And again, I think, John, you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's right. And really the push is the new standards come about. And I know that's somewhat of a controversial topic. But in any case, teachers and students are going to need more access to primary source materials. They're going to need access to develop them into learning units and plans that the teachers can then take into the classroom. So as Jody mentioned, our education officer is working with teachers in the community to try to get their feedback. And we all know that teachers don't have that much time, right? They're very pressed for time, and so they need to be able to go to a place like Florida Memory, go to our online classroom section, and find the resources that they need. This year in particular, we're working on units. We worked on a civil rights unit just this past year. We worked on one with the Florida Seminoles, centered on Florida Seminole history. You can imagine I had a big role in that. I was very excited to work on that. And we also did one on the Cuban experience in Florida. And we're working also on revising our units on the World War II in Florida, on the Civil War in Florida. And these are a lot of the popular topics that come up. And again, teachers and students are going to need access to these materials. And what we really want to do, the role we really want to play, is not just slapping them up online and saying, well, here you go, is packaging them in such a way as that the teachers and the students can easily digest, this is what this material is, this is how I can use it, this is how I can take it offline, bring it into the classroom, this is how my students are going to directly benefit from the materials in the state archives.
And we take that a little step further. We don't want to just provide what they need. We want to excite them. We want to show them what we have. And that's worked really, really well. We have a number of school groups that come to the state archives to talk to John and Katrina, who never did that before. They want their input, and they want to give their input.
Now, that's exciting, and particularly for educators who so often have a real challenge with something called the reliability of the resource, because we all love Wikipedia, and that has kind of become the default source for a lot of information, but there are some pitfalls there. And because it is a user-driven device, I'm not saying that there's deliberate falsification of information or inaccuracies, but sometimes they kind of creep in. You folks in the Florida Archives, I mean, this is verified. This is historically accurate. This is the real deal, the good stuff that teachers and students can use.
That's absolutely right. And we want it also to be a teaching tool in that respect and helping students and teachers understand where do you go for reliable information. And we're certainly not the only place in Florida that you can find that type of information online. But it's also about teaching students the process of doing research. Right, as you mentioned, things like Wikipedia, not taking everything you see on the internet at face value, but learning how to do research, learning how to understand arguments and things like that, learning how to construct your own argument, learning how to come up with your own analysis. And so part of what we're doing when we put these sources online, we recently put up some materials that'll teach students the difference between primary and secondary sources and give them, this is what a historian would have. This is what the historian produced. So they can look at the difference, right? They can understand writing history as a process done by humans, right? it's not all fact that exists out there independent of the work that historians are doing. So we want to also push that point as well.
And it's also the excitement of discovery, of investigation, of detective work is not just on Miami CSI. It also can take place right in Florida history using the state archives. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and we're talking about the Archives of Florida and the Florida Memory Project. 414-1234, our number. We'll be right back. Although new as it might be, only having really gotten underway in 1969, Florida State Archives have really grown incredibly and have transitioned into the internet age in fine fashion through this Florida Memory Project, which you might be able to become a part of. Get your family history on the official record there. That's what we're talking about here on Perspectives. 414-1234, the local number, it's 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, Perspectives at WFSU.org is our email address. And we have John Grandage and Jody Norman from the Archives of Florida with us here today. Jody, you were just mentioning, again, for the benefit of folks who hadn't been with us early on, this Florida Memory Project and how taking the hard copy, the photographs and the documents and all of that stuff and transition it into the digital domain, that has just been an all-consuming endeavor for you guys here for the past couple of years.
Yes. It's very difficult to digitize a photographic collection. There's a lot involved. But the Tallahassee Democrat, the one that we are working on now and the one that we will feature during the slideshow in October, is particularly difficult because the only identification we have with the negatives, and there are no prints, are the dates. So basically, we take the negative and throw it on a light table and say, hey, this looks like somebody important. And then we mark that negative, and then we take the negative the next day to the State Library Research Room and look through their microfilm on the Tallahassee Democrat. It's tedious. It leaves room for a lot of errors. But I'm a native Tallahasseean, and so I recognize a lot of people. Just a little anecdote I'll share with you now. The first photographs, the date range of the collection, it ranges from 1953 to 1970. And the first, say, 100 photos were just negatives taken out of their enclosures with no dates, no nothing. So I didn't even know whether I should bother looking at them, but I pulled the first 4x5 negative and I threw it on the light table and I said, wow, that's Coach Nugent, who was the coach, the big coach before Bill Peterson with Florida State. And I was looking through the light loop and slipped it over to the left-hand side, and standing next to Coach Nugent was my dad, who played quarterback at Florida State. And standing next to him was Bill Proctor, who was a very big Tallahassee name. And it's a beautiful image, and it ended up being the only image I found from 1955. But I guess my point is, I challenge anyone and everyone listening to this radio station to look at Florida Memory for 5 minutes, and there is no way you're not going to find a photograph that doesn't interest you. It may be your hometown. It may be friends of yours. It may be an event that you participated in. It may be an old business. It may be where you went to school. But the site will knock your socks off. You just have to trust me. It's a wonderful, wonderful site. So just to give you some ideas of some of the images we found thus far in the Democrat collection, and we've only cataloged or made available online 1,300, and we expect to eventually have 7,000 images up, it's community newspaper, right? Okay, so let's keep that in mind. In all fairness, it's community newspaper. So you have things like the opening day at Myers Park. You have Boy Scout camps. You have parades. You have first birthdays. You have first haircuts. You have the A&M Hospital. I don't know that we had more than one photo of the A&M Hospital. It's beautiful. You have interiors of nurses in the hospital working with polio victims. You have mobile x-ray units that traveled all through Tallahassee and did chest x-rays. You have disaster shots like flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, fires. You have buildings that people have been here as long as I know, have recognized as the Florida Theater, Tallahassee Democrat, Woolworths, the Little Folks Store, Mutt and Jeff's Drive-In. You know, I went there many times as a young student. Street scenes, I'll just leave it at 1950 West Tennessee Street and 2013 West Tennessee Street look nothing alike. The greatest thing that I found, I've become an FSU football fanatic, is we found photos of Bob Hayes, Bullet Bob Hayes, when he played track at FAMU and when he played football at FAMU. There are not a lot of photos of him available. We found beautiful, wonderful photos of Burt Reynolds when he was playing football at FSU. The latest find was a 1964 photo of Bobby Bowden as the assistant coach at FSU, walking down the sideline, you know, hanging out with the players, and he's cute and skinny and just a different looking. He didn't look like Saint Bobby Bowden in that photo. Street scenes, I've talked about those. There's wonderful street scenes. Street scenes showing the Smoky Hollow neighborhood, which most people might not remember as being the African-American neighborhood that was raised after a certain law was passed.
If I might jump in, too, one thing, because of the time period, we are finding a lot of civil rights photos as well. And one photo, Jody can talk a little bit more about this, but we found a photo of Patricia Stevens Due being arrested during one of the demonstrations in downtown.
Oh, that was even mentioned during the dedication of the Heritage Walk the other night down at Tallahassee City Hall. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Patricia Stevens used to come into the archives all the time. She loved the photos that we had. We had many of that identified her. She always wore Dort glasses, so it was hard to pick her out. In front of the Florida Theater and other businesses around town, Woolworth's counter. But she always said to me, Jody, I know there's some photos of me being arrested. I know there are, but we could never find them. But now going through methodically through this collection, we did in fact find the photos of her being arrested. And they're wonderful. They're really great. Unfortunately, she died a few years back, and we won't be able to share them with her, but hopefully we will be able to share them with her family.
Yeah, John Due was, in fact, in this building yesterday.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah, okay. He sure was. You know, we had a long chat about all kinds of great stuff.
Okay, there's a caveat there. We found many good photos of John Due as well. So And just to fill in a little bit, we have a lot of industry shots, oyster shuckers in Apalachicola, tobacco farmers in Quincy. Governor Leroy Collins was without question the most popular or the most highly photographed governor in Florida. We have wonderful photos of he and his family. And then kind of some miscellaneous stuff, moonshine, illegal liquor raids. This must have been a big moonshine county. The photographer for the Democrat covered everything, crime scenes, car accidents, so we've got it all.
God, that is remarkable. And in fact, I think one of your assistants has given us a call here. Thanks for your patience, Ron. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Yeah, I'm not an assistant, but I just wanted to say I spent the summer reading Governor John Milton's letters up in the archives, and everybody up there was so helpful to me, even though I'm not a historian. I didn't know how to use the machines or what their cataloging system was like, but I got a lot of help, very cheerful and very helpful.
Well, what's it like, though, to, I mean, just go in there and you got some questions and you're trying to find something? What's that process like, Ron?
Oh, it's very simple. I just went up, you know, you sign in. I went upstairs to the archive desk and I said what I was looking for, and you know, if I didn't speak to the first person right away that knew about those things, they would immediately direct me to the right person. And they have a lot of people who know a lot up there, just an awful lot of things. And I also want to add that the lectures that go on in the building are really very interesting too. Lectures about Seminole history. I recently went one about Seminole cattle raising and the black Seminoles and stuff. All of it very interesting.
Boy, thanks for sharing that, Ron. We really appreciate it and glad it turned out to be a valuable resource for you. While we're on the subject of telephone callers, let's check out Chucha there on line number two. Hey, Chucha.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Oh, it is so good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. I am calling to publicly thank your guest because I had the privilege of working as the lead producer on the Viva Florida 500 project, and we would not have been able to produce that television show without the Florida Memory Project and the work of your guests. So I just wanted to say it's invaluable in so many ways to all of us understanding Florida's great history, and I so appreciate all that they do.
It's so great to hear from you, Chucha. Hope all's well with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, but again, that is showing what a real resource this is, because I think it intimidates a lot of folks because, oh, gosh, what if I seem stupid or I don't know what I'm looking for, or, oh, golly, it would be too intimidating when I hear about tens of thousands of cubic feet of documents. I couldn't find anything. God, I don't know what's in my closet. You know, how could I possibly deal with the Florida archives? But it's not just the physical memorabilia and all of that. It's also the people who can help you find this
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. The first thing a reference archivist will do is help you narrow down what your research interests are. And that works very well.
Well, you must have a staff of dozens then, right?
Two. Budget cuts are hell.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, my God. But
they do an excellent job, and we have people who back them up and people that they can call to the desk and assist with any questions. But I think one of the things you'll find true, not just in the state archives, but with every division in the Department of State, people love what they do. I mean, they are really fired up about what they do. So they love helping people. I mean, they really love it. You can see it in their eyes. If you turn the mics over to John and I right now, we'll talk another 3 or 4 hours. We do a lot of cool stuff, and so do they.
Well, I'd also recommend that anyone who wants to just check out the Florida Memory Project online, you better set aside maybe 2 or 3 hours, because once you get in, it's like a labyrinth. You will have trouble finding your way out because everything you find leads to something else even more interesting. And suddenly the entire afternoon has whizzed by and you have no idea where it went. But boy, do you feel well informed at the tail end of that adventure. It's really terrific.
Yeah, I wanted to mention as well, Tom, the URL is really simple for the website. It's just floridamemory.com. And then we also have a lot of different social media things that we do as well. So folks who want to follow us on Facebook, there's an Archives Facebook. And we put a lot of different material on there as well, things that are both from Florida Memory, but then also things that may not see the light of day because they're in the archives. And we try to bring those things to light as well. We also do Twitter. So you can follow us on Twitter, and that's at Florida Memory. And then we also have in addition to Twitter and Facebook, we have a blog that lives on the front page of our website. We post on there 3 to 5 times a week. Current events, events coming up, articles on historical resources in the archives. We also do, in addition to those, Flickr, photo sharing website that we've gotten a ton of traffic on recently. And I've been putting up Tallahassee Democrat photos that Jody's been finding in the collection. And then we also do Pinterest and Tumblr as well. So we're everywhere on social media.
Well, what about Instagram? What's wrong with you people?
I mean, I think we're working on that.
We've actually been exploring it. Yeah.
My golly. And again, with just two people, and at the same time, you're fielding all of these inquiries and requests for help and all that. You busy guys.
Well, you got to keep in mind we have two reference archivists. And then we have the Florida Memory team, and that's a little bit separate. So we have about 10 people who work on the Florida Memory goals. Florida Memory is grant funded, so we set goals every year and we try and achieve those goals. And we almost always have by the end of the year. And then we write a new grant proposal with new goals and we start working on those.
And I think Jody's being a little bit modest here. Not only do we meet the goals in our grant, but we find new things to do throughout the year that weren't in the grant, but we just want to really get online. Smaller collections, we did a Civil War diary, for example, this year. Or last year, we did a Second Seminole War diary. And so these are things that we come across, and we just really want to get them online and really share them with the people of Florida. So we're working really hard. And as I mentioned at the beginning, sometimes it's having to put things off. That's very torturous for a historian.
Yeah. In the course of an average week or month, how many new items on average do you get into the online collection?
So we do it three different ways. We catalog photos daily, and we add about 200 new photos a week. Okay. We average 5,000 new photos a year. And with the audio collection, we average 100 to 300 new recordings a year. With the film collection, we try and average 100 new films a year. And with educational units, that may vary back and forth because, like, for example, this year we are tweaking some of the earlier educational units. So we'll spend time doing that instead of creating new learning units.
Okay. And if you're a teacher just joining us, that's something you may want to avail yourself of to check out what's going on relative to not only the Florida Memory Project, but the lesson plans, the essentially turnkey educational resources that are available through the archives. Because, I mean, let's face it, with everything you guys got to do, you need to grab something that's already preconceived and put together and get it to the classroom as quickly as you can. And that's what you folks have relative to Florida history, right?
Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Correct. And one of the things I wanted to talk about or elaborate about with the photographic collection is, because it is the most important component that we have, is that not only are we always adding to it, but I challenge anyone listening to this radio station not to find something that really interests in them, whether it's a hometown photo, a friend or a family, if it's fishing, industry, farming, daily life. It's guaranteed you're going to find something that catches your interest. And one thing to point out, that the quality of the images, we have private family donations, and then we have the top photographers, some top photographers in the country who donate their collections. So the quality of images may vary back and forth, but the historical significance, I think, is comparable.
And it's interesting the various ways you can use these collections. And another full disclosure, when I was with another line of work several years ago, I was in charge of developing a newsletter for my company, and we needed to find some historic photographs of all things, telephone operators and telephone workers on poles right here in this area. And I thought, where in the name of God am I going to find something like that? There was nothing in my company's archives for it. And someone mentioned to me, well, go to the R.A. Gray building. Check out the state archives. And I went down, and just like Ron said, it was just so easy. I went, you know, signed in, went up to the desk and said, can you guys help me? I'm looking for these specific things. Within 5 minutes,
yeah.
I had just about a museum-quality copy of everything that I needed. And I had no idea how that came to be. It was wonderful. And the photographs were just brilliant and exactly what I needed for that project.
The primary users of the photographic collection are media outlets, so that the staff working in the photo collection deal with HBO Sports, Discovery Channel, Oprah. It used to be Late Night with Conan. We've been doing some stuff for Burn Notice. I haven't figured that one out yet. All day long.
Well, folks, a quick plug here for the slideshow coming up next Friday, October 11th from 6 until 8 with free food and drink. And Scan Day, Saturday, October 12th from 10 until 4. So John Grantage and Jody Norman, thank you guys for coming in and sharing all that about us from the archives.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox on the board today. Lydell Rawls with the calls and the emails. I'm Tom Flanagan. Taking a couple weeks off. We got pledge break coming up, and we'll see you on the flip side right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.